This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 30th of September, 2022, end of month, end of quarter. There may be some flows going through on that account, potentially in the dollar. We've also had, of course, a lot of volatility this week on this whole episode with the emergency QE from the Bank of England. Seems quite clear that there was a lot of contagion from that into other sovereign bonds markets. And I'll get to that in a moment on the FX side of things. But that has helped that save and that liquidity that was introduced by the Bank of England, helping yields back lower. But very curious to see, and a couple episodes ago, I asked the question, could we see a correlation jump away from what we have been seeing, which is this grinding higher of yields and a grinding down of equity markets? And we did see the sovereign bond markets calming quite a bit yesterday and sort of flat to the low end of the yield range, whereas equity sold off rather strongly. I think this is quite a remarkable divergence. And I wonder from here if, and big if, we do see a continued meltdown in equities if the sovereign bond markets finally serve as the safe haven they traditionally have, with the understanding that ultimately there is a backstop from central banks, as demonstrated by the Bank of England. And I expect we are. The Bank of England's experience here will be repeated elsewhere eventually. Sovereign bond markets must be stable at all costs eventually. QT is never really going to happen materially, is my firm belief. But how much damage will the Fed do, for example, as the world's global central bank before coming to that realization as well? So much to talk about, Peter, but I'll throw it over to you. We had specifically also some bad news with the world's largest market cap company, Apple, and it's deciding not to expand some of its iPhone production and some other issues there that got the market spooked yesterday as well. So I'll take us through what you're seeing in this pretty white knuckle market here.
It's getting pretty crazy, to say the least. But the news we got yesterday from H&M, Nike, and Micron, and were basically what I have said for quite some time now, that the dynamic and the equity market to the downside is coming from the margin pressure. It's going really to be a big surprise, I think, to a lot of analysts and maybe not so much to investors, because I think to some extent the prices are reflecting what we're seeing, but analyst downgrades will come in handily. We had a massive profit margin surprise to the downside for H&M yesterday. The outlook was very gloomy. They're even beginning now to charge for people sending back online, so online returns. Nike was okay on the revenue side. They have quite a buildup on the inventory still. So obviously, that's going to be an overhang. They missed on the margin as well. Outlook was not very good. And then Micron Technologies outlook, $4 to $4.5 billion revenue for the current quarter versus $6 billion analyst estimates. I mean, think about that. It's almost a 33% downside surprise against estimates. I mean, the memory chip manufacturers are just falling out of the bed. The demand is coming down, and that's why I'm increasingly getting more negative on Apple, as I wrote in my note when I was doing my touring in Amsterdam. Because Apple is not immune to the cost of living crisis, and there are significant input pressures as well for Apple. So I think Apple will surprise. And then you also had yesterday Mark Zuckerberg saying that Facebook is going to do a total freeze on hiring, and probably restructuring is coming. They're spending $12 billion on an annualized basis on their fantasy world, which is costing a lot of electricity to run. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So I think Meta, now being priced at 11 times earnings, I mean, it's priced as a value stock, but they will have to do some serious restructuring. So that's coming as well. And then we have Tesla. I've been arguing for a while in some of my equity notes that I think Apple and Tesla have been the two stocks that have really been holding the line here in the equity market, keeping those indices afloat relative to what's going on. And now you're beginning to see cracks as well for Tesla. It's very clear from my trip to Poland 2 weeks ago, but also in Amsterdam, what I've been told there, that the key thing that could really, create a massive roadblock for Tesla's growth, which I don't think the analyst or Cathie Wood is really thinking about, is to the extent that actually the grid and the infrastructure can keep up with more and more electric vehicles. Just to give you a quick example, so at the Saxo's headquarters in Amsterdam, they have been asked the city hall for getting more charger points, but they're getting refusal all the time because the city hall says the grid cannot take it any longer in that local business district where the office is. So I think that, again, it's the supply side. It cannot really keep up with the demand. And I think that's really a potential key risk for Tesla here. And then, John, finally, I know I've talked a lot, but that I didn't have time to do the slides today. So I want to talk about the big things in equities. And I think going into the weekend, of course, the geopolitical risk in Ukraine with the Russia announcing and finalizing the referendum with an annexation of these four regions in Ukraine. I think it, I believe it's set to be 3 p.m. Moscow time today. And I think that's a considerable risk to consider, depending on what news that are coming out of this whole thing and how the West responds to it, how Russia is responding and going into the weekend. I mean, I think we are really, really at a very fine inflection point of a meltdown in
yeah,
the
and linked to that, yeah, linked to that, of course, was the blow up of the pipelines. Who did that and why? And there, I think there's been a threat as well as some of the pipelines that go under in across Eastern Europe. All the threats that, around that. And if you look at places in the market where some of this geopolitical tension mentioned is getting expressed, look at the CEE currencies. I think this is where you're seeing the most nervousness and where you can kind of isolate it from what is going on elsewhere. And I have that on slide three. So you can see Euro HUF, so the Hungarian forint, trading at the record highs for the history of that currency pair. And then Euro Polish Zloty is back up to where it was, except for the highest levels, except for where it was trading for a few days around the pandemic. Not the pandemic, but the Russian invasion of Ukraine back in late February, early March timeframe. So they're certainly seeing some nervousness, and we all have to, you know, be aware of the crazy nonlinear effects if something does unfold in that direction. I don't know where we want to pick up the pieces with energy prices, but you have Germany out today or yesterday actually as well, talking about a 200 billion euro effort to suppress natural gas and electricity prices, loading that up on the sovereign balance sheet to keep prices suppressed for consumers and industry. Germany is going to be in a world of hurt if it has to do anything beyond the next few months. And I suspect there are some portions of German industry that are simply going to have to relocate to lower cost areas. But what's your latest on what you're seeing in the energy markets here? And how do you price it once now that we're capping this? How does the market deal with that cap in terms of what trades?
Well, the market has stabilized somewhat. If you look at the gas market this week compared to the panic earlier, and as I put out on the slide yesterday, there are expectations that given the current trajectory in terms of demand destruction in Europe this winter and the high import levels of LNG, we are not going to run out of gas, even if we had a very tough winter. And that's even assuming that Russia will cut off its remaining supplies through Ukraine, thereby only leaving the Turkish line open, which is going to friendly nations primarily. So if we do get through the next few months, I would imagine that gas, instead of trading 200, should be trading closer to 100. But that is still a big if. And that obviously will alleviate some of this pressure. But still, an industry that's built on gas sub 20 euros, which has to even at 100, it's still way too expensive for the long term outlook. So so that will be a very challenging point for Europe this winter. But looking at stateside, the gas prices there has been going the opposite direction. We're down 25% on the month. So I'm looking at slide seven here. John is shaking his head. It's such a key commodity, which has actually been and in such a hot demand, and nevertheless it's still coming down 25%. Obviously from a I can't remember whether it's a record or not, but at least a multi-decade high price at $10.
It reached $14.15 for very brief periods back before shale gas production came online.
So we're now trading sub seven and down 25% as a month. But some of the charts you're on the right hand side can basically shows what's going on. And while we're seeing absolutely no increase in oil production in the US from shale oil, the gas production has actually been doing really well. We are currently producing in September 7% more than we did this time last year. We are trading, we're constantly producing more than 100 billion cubic feet a day. And at the same time, the exports of LNG has slowed. We had this outage, one of the big export hubs, can't even remember the name now.
Freeport,
exactly, a few months ago, and that is still only slowly coming back. So, and at the same time, it's starting to cool down a bit in the US as well. So, we're actually cooling down faster than we've done on average. So, that's also reducing demand for heating. So generally, gas remains cheap, relatively stateside, but extremely expensive in Europe. If we should just stay on the energy energy side of things, just the crude oil market. I can't help thinking that we are pretty close to a low point here. We touched the we went below the mid 80s in Brent this week. We are bouncing a little bit. Yes, there's no doubt that demand is a major concern, not only for as interest rates are being hiked and we are heading towards a recession in certain areas. We've got Chinese lockdowns not going away. But again, against that, the supply side looks equally challenged. OPEC is likely to cut production next week. The SPR sale, which you can see here on slide six, they have released 170 million barrels so far this year. We are getting close to the end of that exercise. And OPEC is already struggling reaching the targets they have agreed to. New sanctions against Iran was announced yesterday, and we got the Russian embargo coming up as well. So a market where there's been quite a lot of selling, speculative selling in anticipation of an economic slowdown recently. I think we are probably getting close to the low point there.
All right, let's pick it up with FX. So interesting to see, of course, with yields coming down and with risk sentiment poor, and a combination we haven't really seen much of, what would you expect happens? Well, you kind of expect the yen to do well, but the yen's in a weird place because it was doing far better than it should have when interest rates were rising, sort of staying in check because the focus was a bit elsewhere in Europe, especially the UK, of course, and the US was trying to hedge these duration risk exposures. And now that we've got things swinging back in the yen's favor, it's just staying flat and actually weak against some of these other currencies. I think it's just a non-story, really. There just haven't been new flows there. But still watching the dollar yen as it's poised just below 145. But elsewhere, it is about this huge turnaround in the dollar. I think some of that what was probably some very intensive hedging, not just in the bond market, but globally, but also potentially in the currency market. If you look at what cable did, of course, just melting lower once it fell below. But 112 was sort of the demarcation point all the way to that 103 odd low we saw. And we've actually traded full circle back to 112 overnight. I would say we're not really in reversal shape here. I said 112.50 yesterday, but really, if you look at that chart on slide four, 115 is really needed to reverse this latest wave. We're still some ways off from that. We do have the UK government, so at least Prime Minister Truss and Chancellor Kwarteng meeting with the Office of Budget Responsibility head. I believe it's today, ahead of the OBR is called, will deliver some kind of forecast on the budget figures next week. So if you do get some pulling back some of those measures that have been announced recently, whether on the energy subsidy side or the tax cut side, that could change the outlook for sterling, especially in the crosses. Watch for that. Maybe a bit more added political pressure after this latest YouGov poll showed Labour with a 33-point lead over the Tories. That's the biggest margin that poll has seen since the 1990s. So a lot of focus, of course, on sterling, but also on the dollar status. And if the dollar is pivoting here because the market senses in some grander scheme of things that we're rumbling closer to that Minsky moment or the markets, lurching towards a systemic crisis that is just going to require the Fed to admit that it's going to come out and have to do at least balance sheet operations to calm things down, if not on the interest rate side. That's the only argument I can see for the dollar to turn over here or turn around here. It feels a bit early to me, but I'm very open-minded on how this unfolds. Certainly, I think that the Fed tightening and especially the QT will break the markets far before it will break the economy. And I think the Bank of England was simply the canary in the coal mine, the first and the weakest link to go. By the way, let's look at that jobless claims figure yesterday, below 200K, just a massively strong figure. It's not hard to find a job in the U.S. Interesting to see, of course, and we'll get the dollar status next week with all of these key macro data points we see at the first week of the month, ISMs, and especially the jobs and earnings data on Friday. You had one more commodity slide. Well, I'll let you wrap that up while I gather my thoughts on where we take the conversation with the earnings season coming up and the macro calendar for next week.
Yeah, and actually it ties also back to what Peter said earlier about the electrical grid struggling to cope. That obviously requires a lot of investment if we actually want to fulfill these our aspirations about the transformation. As we've highlighted on numerous occasions, the transformation will require a lot of metals of all shapes and sizes and colors. Probably more the sizes. So I'll just put in on slide 5 here the aluminium price, because we saw quite a decent, well, actually a very strong pop. Yes, it was the biggest intraday jump, 8.5% we've seen, I believe, on record. It was caused by notes from the LME exchange in London, basically discussing the possibilities or the reasons for potentially banning Russian metals being traded or being delivered into the exchange and being traded on the exchange. And that really sent the cat among the pigeons. LME's aluminium spiked, zinc and nickel followed. Not to the same extent, but it did jump as well, and copper as well. We can see on the insert, which I borrowed from Goldman Sachs, note they sent out yesterday, just highlighting the importance of aluminium and nickel as Russia being a supplier into the global market. This is excluding Chinese production. As you can see, aluminium is close to 14% of global aluminium supply ex-China. So if that would happen, it would obviously add another dimension to upward price pressures. And just talk about the overall demand for metals. Again, prices have come down significantly, but so has inventories at warehouses monitored by the major exchanges. You just wonder what will happen when we see the situation start to stabilize, or the market start to revert their focus to the supply side, which remains challenged in my view.
All right. Suggest maybe that we're headed towards quite a real GDP recession, which I think is certainly going to be the case first and quickest and deepest in Europe due to the energy costs that we're seeing. Okay. Peter, I suppose that next week, if we're looking forward to the earnings season starting, it's not really next week, it's at earliest the week after that for the very, very first reporters for Q3. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's correct. And again, I really apologize because I came home very late from touring with Saxo. So, but there are a couple of earnings releases next week. But you're right, the real action kicks in 2 weeks. But next week, I'm sitting with the list here in front of me, and I will do an earnings preview today on analysis.saxo, where I will try to write out and scope my thoughts on this earnings season, and especially what we have seen from companies in the past couple of days, as we talked about earlier in the podcast. But next week, two companies I want to highlight. So the first one is reporting on Tuesday. That's BioEngine. BioEngine, together with their Japanese partner, released a very, very significant breakthrough on an Alzheimer drug that, for the first time in the world, showed significant progress statistically in a very big clinical group versus the control group to slow down Alzheimer's. So this is a big success, and I think there will be a lot of focus on BioEngine's that earnings release, and get a little bit more color on what they see, is what is the overall potential for this drug, et cetera. And then on Wednesday, we have Tesco reporting, and I think given the cost of living crisis and what's taking place in the UK right now, I think actually Tesco and they often are quite transparent in their in what's going on and what they see in terms of pricing pressure and the economy. And I think from a macro perspective, it's worth having a look at the Tesco on Wednesday.
All right, let's have a look at the just briefly. I just thought of it before talking about the macro calendar. So next areas, if we are going to continue to melt lower here in equities, for example, in the U.S. S&P 500, slide 9, you can see the weekly perspective there. And I'd pull out a couple of levels. 3,400 is that last major high, at least for the continuous future. It's probably a couple points different on the cash from early 2020 before the pandemic breakout. I think it's a major milestone there. But ahead of that, we have this 200-week moving average. And you can see that it dipped and just barely touched that back in late 2018 before the Powell pivot. And it was broken, but only for a couple of weeks during the pandemic wipeout. And then once briefly back in 2011. But that's a really major moving average that if we're breaking and staying below that, that's the last time we've really done that, was back in the 2008 and 9 experience, where we saw an extended excursion below that level. And then the 61.8% retracement at 3180 around there is a key sort of Fibonacci retracement level. But let's go to the macro calendar points here. And a few bits and pieces today. The most interesting is the August PCE inflation data point. And just for surprise factor there, looking at the core month on month, which I think would be the one that is, if it's surprising, is the key one. It's expected at plus 0.5%, quite high, but the prior month was all the way down at plus 0.1. So there could be some mean reversion on that. But if that surprised significantly to the upside, and or the year-on-year data does as well, above 4.7%, which is expected. The peak, by the way, was 5.3% year-on-year. That could spook the market a bit. And we also have Fed Vice Chair Brainard out speaking. The financial stability topic is going to be very interesting, as we saw this latest event from the Bank of England. And I think it's something that the Fed will be grappling with before it's grappling with trying to support the economy. It's going to be trying to support chaos from happening, or not support chaos from happening, but to prevent chaos from happening in the financial markets. Next week, as I mentioned already, the ISMs and the U.S. jobs report, especially earnings. And we have an RBA cash target, the market pricing 40 basis points of hiking. I think if the Australian dollar remains exceptionally weak, we could see a 50 basis point move. That would be a huge surprise. The market had been downshifting a bit, but is shifting that a little bit back higher for the expectations for Australia. I think the interesting thing here is, of course, bad nerves here ahead of a weekend. And we have geopolitical tensions afoot. How much risk are people willing to keep on their books at the moment? We've seen this crazy wipeout and then semi-recovery from that based on the UK and the Bank of England emergency QE. And we also have month-end and quarter-end. So just quite a cocktail of events happening here in the backdrop. So stay careful out there. Have a wonderful weekend. And we'll hope things are fairly steady when we come back on Monday with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.